The Great God Pan by Arthur Machen. Chapter 1. The Experiment.
I am glad you came, Clark. Very glad indeed. I was not sure you could spare the time.
I was able to make arrangements for a few days. Things are not very lively just now.
But have you no misgivings, Raymond? Is it absolutely safe?
The two men were slowly pacing the terrace in front of Dr. Raymond's house. The sun still hung above the western mountain line, but it shone with a dull red glow that cast no shadows, and all the air was quiet. A sweet breath came from the great wood on the hillside above, and with it, at intervals, the soft murmuring call of the wild doves. Below, in the long, lovely valley, the river wound in and out between the lonely hills, and as the sun hovered and vanished into the west, a faint mist, pure white, began to rise from the hills. Dr. Raymond turned sharply to his friend.
Safe? Of course it is. In itself, the operation is a perfectly simple one. Any surgeon could do it.
And there is no danger at any other stage?
None. Absolutely no physical danger whatsoever, I give you my word. You are always timid, Clark, always. But you know my history. I have devoted myself to transcendental medicine for the last 20 years. I have heard myself called quack and charlatan and impostor, but all the while I knew I was on the right path. 5 years ago I reached the goal, and since then every day has been a preparation for what we shall do tonight.
I should like to believe it is all true.
Clark knit his brows and looked doubtfully at Dr. Raymond.
Are you perfectly sure, Raymond, that your theory is not a phantasmagoria? A splendid vision, certainly, but a mere vision, after all.
Dr. Raymond stopped in his walk and turned sharply. He was a middle-aged man, gaunt and thin, of a pale yellow complexion, but as he answered Clark and faced him, there was a flush on his cheek.
Look about you, Clark. You see the mountain, and hill following after hill, as wave on wave. You see the woods and orchard, the fields of ripe corn, and the meadows reaching to the reed beds by the river. You see me standing here beside you and hear my voice. But I tell you that all these things, yes, from that star that has just shone out in the sky to the solid ground beneath our feet, I say that all these are but dreams and shadows, the shadows that hide the real world from our eyes. There is a real world, but it is beyond this glamour and this vision, beyond these chases in Arras, dreams in a career, beyond them all as beyond a veil. I do not know whether any human being has ever lifted that veil, but I do know, Clark, that you and I shall see it lifted this very night from before another's eyes. You may think this all strange nonsense. It may be strange, but it is true, and the ancients knew what lifting the veil means. They called it seeing the god Pan.
Clark shivered. The white mist gathering over the river was chilly.
It is wonderful indeed, he said. We are standing on the brink of a strange world, Raymond, if what you say is true. I suppose the knife is absolutely necessary?
Yes. A slight lesion in the gray matter, that is all. A trifling rearrangement of certain cells. A microscopical alteration that would escape the attention of 99 brain specialists out of 100. I don't want to bother you with shop, Clark. I might give you a mass of technical detail that would sound very imposing, and would leave you as enlightened as you are now. But I suppose you have read, casually, in out-of-the-way corners of your paper, that immense strides have been made recently in the physiology of the brain. I saw a paragraph the other day about Digby's theory and Braun-Faber's discoveries. Theories and discoveries! Where they are standing now, I stood 15 years ago, and I need not tell you that I have not been standing still for the last 15 years. It would be enough if I say that 5 years ago I made the discovery that I alluded to when I said that 10 years ago I reached the goal. After years of labor, after years of toiling and groping in the dark, after days and nights of disappointments and sometimes of despair, in which I used now and then to tremble and grow cold with the thought that perhaps there were others seeking for what I sought. At last, after so long, a pang of sudden joy thrilled my soul, and I knew the long journey was at an end. By what seemed then and still seems a chance, the suggestion of a moment's idle thought followed up upon familiar...